Vaughan was dying to talk. About Judith Gray, not his putative peculations. I'm steering clear of that subject for the present, as we agreed.
Don't want to throw a spanner in the works of the fraud people.
I'll tell you the rest later. Just one point you ought to know right away. He saw her after her quarrel with his wife, so she was still alive at that point. You may want to concentrate on whether there was a second encounter.
Right. Are you done with him?
He's had an apparent emotional breakdown. If he's pulled himself together, I'll keep going. If not, there's always tomorrow. I doubt he'll be arrested on the other charge before late afternoon.
Langridge had to talk to Davis. Then they had to prove their case to the fraud division of the Bucks police, if such existed, or their outside experts. Doubtless Davis's partner, Mrs. Vaughan's brother, would also have to be consulted, or at least warned. Alec returned to Vaughan. He had dried his eyes, now red, whether from weeping or rubbing, and looked defiant.
I don't believe she's dead. Something has prevented her writing to me. Perhaps she lost the accommodation address I gave her in all the upheaval of packing and travelling. Don't you think?
He appealed to Alec.
Or her letter could have been lost in the post.
Quite possible.
She might have written to Cherry Trees to be called for, and those women who bought her house threw it away. If she addressed it to the office, everything is so disorganized it could be anywhere. She knows better than to send it here.
His almost feverish cataloguing of the ways Judith Gray's letter might have gone astray was damnably persuasive. Alec suppressed a yawn. He was too tired to judge.
Did Mrs. Vaughan call on Mrs. Gray a second time?
No. Judith would have told me.
If she had survived the encounter. When did you last see Mrs. Gray? The date, or even just the day of the week, could help us trace her.
Saturday. It was a Saturday morning. She was about to leave for London. I told you she spent most weekends in town. She usually went up on a Friday and came back Monday or Tuesday. But she said she was going to return on Sunday because she had so much to do.
Had she much luggage with her?
Just an overnight bag. She kept some clothes at her friend's flat. Mrs. Knox. Not a man, in case you were wondering. I offered to carry the bag to the station for her, but she still didn't want us to be seen together, even though we were very soon going away together. I'll find her somehow. Mrs. Knox, Elizabeth, will know where she is.
You have Mrs. Knox's address?
No. Do you?
Vaughan asked eagerly.
Sorry, it's my business to ask questions, not answer them.
In any case, Mrs. Knox wasn't at her London address.
It's in Belgravia, I know that much. And her husband's name is Freddie. Frederick. I'll get hold of a directory. How many Frederick Knoxes can there be in Belgravia?
It was a rhetorical question. Alec said sharply,
You're not to leave the area without providing an address to the police.
He decided to call it a day.
One more question for now. Do you, or did you ever, have in your possession a key to the cellar?
Never. I never had any keys. She wouldn't let me show the house when she wasn't at home.
Very well. We'll want to talk to you again tomorrow and have you sign a statement. What time would suit you to come into the police station? In either Beaconsfield or High Wycombe?
Beaconsfield? If Mr. Langridge heard I'd been seen going into the police station in Wycombe. I'm showing a house in Penn tomorrow. So I'll have the car in the morning. Noon. I'll be there at noon. Not that I have anything else to tell you. But you said you'll know by tomorrow if... if Judith is still alive?
I said we ought to know. Good night, Mr. Vaughan.
Underwood was also ready to leave. Alec let Ernie Piper take the wheel to drive the inspector and Pennycook to their homes in High Wycombe. On the way, they discussed the interviews. Underwood hadn't learned anything more from Mrs. Vaughan than what Alec had overheard.
"If you ask me, she didn't do it," Underwood said ironically. "Murder isn't respectable."
"By accident."
"Getting into a pushing, shoving match isn't respectable either."
"Neither is a shouting match," Ernie pointed out.
"Which she doesn't admit to," said Underwood. "I don't think she's exactly lying. It's more a matter of editing the facts in her own mind and persuading herself her own behavior was irreproachably, well, respectable."
"Editing out raised voices is one thing," Alec said. "Convincing herself she didn't kill Judith Gray, if she did, would be a bit of a stretch. Her husband, on the other hand, is either a plausible liar, or genuinely grief-stricken, or both."
"You've known more murderers than I have, I imagine. Don't they sometimes bitterly regret the deed and mourn for the victim?"
"Yes, indeed, and that could be the explanation. But I confess, I can't make him out."
"We'll have another go at them tomorrow."
Underwood sighed.
"I suppose it's about time I tried my wiles on Mrs. Hedger. Tomorrow's Wednesday. She'll be at Cherry Trees, and maybe less impregnable than on her own ground."
"Good luck."
"Sergeant, once we find the gardener's whereabouts, you can go and talk to him, if that's all right, Mr. Fletcher. We can't wait till we turn up the housekeeper and the maid."
"Though they're the ones most likely to provide us with new names," said Alec. "The Vaughans and the Cartwrights are all very well, but there must be dozens of people who knew Judith Gray, of whom we have no inkling."
31. Daisy was already awake when Sally tapped on the door and came in with the early morning tea tray. Alec was sound asleep at her side. She hadn't roused when he came in last night. She was inclined to let him sleep, but Sally said,
"Mr. Piper left a message at the desk, Mrs. Fletcher, to wake him and Mr. Fletcher at 7:30.
"I'll take care of Alec, Sally. You can deal with Ernie."
"I already did," she grinned. "He groaned a bit, but he thanked me ever so politely."
She went out. Daisy sat up, leaned over, and kissed Alec. He didn't stir. She shook his shoulder. He grunted, rolled over, and put his arms about her waist.
"Darling, it's time to wake up."
"No."
According to Ernie, via Sally.
"I only just got to bed."
Alec sat up. She poured and passed him his cup of tea. "Did you find out anything worth staying up late for?"
"Not really. The Vaughans and the Cartwrights are still in the picture. Besides them, the note Tom gave you is our best lead, though it could take a few days to lead anywhere."
"How much longer will the super let you stay on the case?" He shrugged.
"Anyone's guess, until he needs me for something more important. I still think you should go home after the inquest."
"Perhaps." Daisy sighed. "I'll go and see Isabel this morning."
"Not too early. Underwood's going to have a chat, try to have a chat, I should say, with Mrs. Hedger. At about 9:30.
"I'll aim for 10:30. What are you doing this morning?"
"It depends on what information comes in from various feelers."
"The Hotel Majestic? And the woman in Saint-Tropez?"
Among others.
Dressing gowned and sponge bag in hand, he went off to take a bath. The sun shone in through the east-facing window. Daisy decided to go for a walk in the country after breakfast. In the latter days of October, fine days were not to be wasted. Alec and Annie were long gone when she went down. Only two couples remained in the dining room, so Sally was at leisure to chat. She brought Daisy's scrambled eggs and toast, then stood leaning on the back of the other chair at the table.
Mr. Piper wouldn't tell me. Do they know yet who did it?
No. Daisy was sure of that after what Alec had said. They're having a difficult time finding out about Mrs. Gray's friends and acquaintances, because she didn't really have any in Beaconsfield. I'm sorry to speak ill of a relative of yours, but your aunt isn't at all helpful.
I doubt she knows much. She's always been one to mind her own business. Whenever I gave her a hand at cherry trees, she'd keep telling me not to poke my nose in where I shouldn't. As if I would. But I'd notice and remember visitors, if I'd seen any. There wasn't none came while I was there,
Sally said regretfully.
I wish I could help Mr. Piper. And Mr. Fletcher, of course.
She departed to answer a call for fresh coffee. Daisy took a pleasant walk through fields and woods. The predominant beeches still enhanced the golden sunlight, though many leaves had fallen to crackle underfoot. Silvery old man's beard and the yellow and red berries of bryony wreathed the field hedges, with here and there a spindle tree flaunting its pink and orange fruit. Rabbits popped out of their burrows to watch Daisy's approach and disappeared underground as she came closer. Squirrels chittered at her from the safety of high branches. She wished she had Nana with her to have fun chasing them. She remembered advising Isabel to get a watchdog. It still seemed a good idea. Now the three of them were back at home, they should start looking for a puppy. On her return to the fringes of the town, Daisy passed a garden where someone was attempting to burn a pile of damp leaves and rubbish. Clouds of smoke billowed across the road and grabbed her by the throat. She tried not to inhale as she hurried past, but she started to cough, bringing on the nightmarish choking sensation that had made her bout of bronchitis so beastly. She emerged from the haze, gasping. A few yards ahead was a bus stop with a bench. She sat down and, after a few minutes, recovered her breath and her equanimity. The doctor had warned that her lungs would be abnormally sensitive to irritants for a while, though with care, they should recover completely. Her chest still ached a bit, but slowly she walked on. By the time she reached cherry trees, she felt much better. Isabel, naturally, was hoping for news of the investigation. "Sorry," said Daisy. "Alec was out very late last night, but he didn't tell me anything this morning. Not much, at least. Just that they were expecting to hear from the Majestic and Mrs. Gray's friend in Saint-Tropez. Mr. Underwood told me they'd already had a telegram from the Surrette. Police and hoteliers never sleep. What did it say? The hotel has the trunks in storage and wants to know what to do with them, since Madame didn't take up her reservation. Did Mr. Underwood get anything out of Mrs. Hedger? No more than you and I did. What's more, she marched out in a huff, saying she wouldn't come back till I could promise she wouldn't be pestered while she was trying to do her job.
Oh, dear.
Mr. Underwood said he wasn't going to try that again. They'll let her cool off, and then, if they still need her, take her over to the station. They have a lead to the Grays' gardener, and they found out the names of the maid and housekeeper, so they're looking for them. When they find them, they may not have to bother with Mrs. Hedger. She's more trouble than she's worth. He told you much more than Alec told me. Isabel smiled. He stayed for a cup of coffee. While she and Daisy talked, she had made a fresh pot of coffee and moved a few ginger snaps from a cooling rack onto a plate, and they had adjourned from kitchen to sitting room. I'm not sure Mrs. Hedger isn't more trouble to me than she's worth, too. I'm really fed up with her. Have another biscuit. Thanks. They're delicious. You must have been up early baking. No earlier than usual. They're very quick to make. You must be busy, though. I don't want to keep you from what you were going to do. Daisy started to get up. No, wait. Isabel glanced at the window. I was going to work in the garden, but judging by the gloom, it's going to start pouring any minute. I thought the sunshine wouldn't last. I wonder if you'd mind lending a hand. Anything I can do to help? Just keeping me company for half an hour, really. The thing is, I want to work out what needs doing in the cellar to make it suitable for storing apples. Jams, and bottled fruit, too, and root vegetables. And, well, to tell the truth, I don't want to be down there alone. I don't blame you. When I went down to inspect the cleaning, the workmen were with me, you see. Not that I believe in ghosts, but I'd just rather not. Of course I'll come. You're bound to need someone to hold one end of a tape measure or something. I'll borrow Vera's tape measure. Dressmaking is not one of my domestic skills. Isabel went over to a Victorian sewing table. I'll get my notebook from my coat pocket. Isabel dropped off the coffee tray in the kitchen on the way. The door to the cellar stood ajar, as she had been airing it since it was cleaned. She stepped onto the landing and reached to her right to click on the electric light. The men nailed a lath across the broken rail, but I don't know how strong it is. Be careful. I won't touch it. Daisy sniffed as she stepped through the door. All she could smell was ginger biscuits. I'm glad I didn't actually see the body. So am I. I don't think I'd ever have been able to use the cellar if I had. It will smell wonderful when it's full of apples. Leaving the door wide open, they cautiously descended the steep, narrow stairs. The handrail bolted to the wall seemed sound enough. Daisy tried to avoid looking at the shallow, rectangular excavation where the body had lain. Apart from a few ordinary shelves in one corner, the wine racks were obviously unsuitable for the kind of storage Isabel needed. You'll be able to reuse the side pieces, won't you? I should think so. Heavens, if these racks were all filled with bottles, he could have tippled day and night for years. Hearing a heavy thud in the house above, Daisy glanced up at the doorway. What was that? I don't know, Isabel said with a frown. I can't think of anything left in a position where it might fall, unless Vera stacked her books in a tall, untidy pile. But I doubt we'd hear that down here, all the way from her bedroom. It sounded like the front door slamming. I'm sure you shut it. Did you lock it? No. I really must get into the habit of...
Hello? Where are you?
A male voice, on the edge of hysteria. It was vaguely familiar to Daisy.
Oh, blast! Isabel exclaimed. It's Vaughan. I suppose he's... I know you're at home. Where are you?
Should I tell him about the Majestic? If it'll get rid of him, Daisy advised. Isabel moved towards the staircase. But before she reached it, Vaughan appeared at the top. Dressed in an overcoat of a rather too vivid blue, he hadn't doffed his hat on entering the house so unceremoniously. In one hand, he held the strap of a leather satchel. In the other, a dripping umbrella. His face was very pale.
"You know where Judith went," he shouted at Isabel. "The copper wouldn't tell me, but it was obvious he knew. And only you could have told him."
"I found out since last time you asked me," Isabel said soothingly. "The police are pretty certain she's dead, but she seems to have made plans to stay at the Hotel Majestic in Paris."
"The Majestic? I'll find it. But I can't have you setting the coppers on my trail. I'm going to lock you in."
"You said you never had the keys." Isabel took a couple of swift strides toward the stairs.
"Keep back!"
Vaughan wielded his steel-ferruled umbrella like a spear.
"One jab, and you'd go flying!"
Without turning his head, he chucked the satchel behind him in the passage. Taking a jangling bunch of keys from his coat pocket, he stepped backwards, pulling the door shut. As it thumped into its frame, Isabel bounded up the steps. Daisy heard the click of the lock. Isabel turned the handle and tugged, but she was too late.
"Blast," said Daisy.
Isabel sat down on the top step and looked at her watch.
11:30. 5 hours till Vera comes home. But Alec will miss you.
Not if he's busy. Vera won't be able to let us out without a key, unless Vaughan's left it in the lock. But she won't know we're stuck here, and she has no reason to try the door.
She'll go into the kitchen for a cuppa. We'll shout through the keyhole.
There's those little flap things, and he may have left the key in the hole.
The first thing is to find out. I brought a pocket torch to get a good look at how the shelves are put together. That'll help.
Isabel ascended the stairs. Daisy, standing at the foot, watched her kneel down on the landing and fiddle with the flap.
It's not very strong. I may be able to lever it off.
I have a nail file in my pocket. Would that help?
Yes.
Daisy trod carefully up the steps, one hand on the wall rail.
Here you are. I'll hold the torch, shall I?
The ceiling light was centrally placed so as to illuminate the racks, and the landing was murky. Daisy trained the torch beam on the keyhole. Isabel easily prized off the little oval piece of brass. She put it in her pocket and stuck the nail file into the hole.
It goes in quite a way. I don't think he left the key.
In any case, the door fits too tight for us to slide a paper under it and catch the key as it falls, the way they do in thrillers.
Let me have the torch a minute.
Isabel tried to shine the light into the keyhole while peering past it and her hand.
I can't see very well, but I'm pretty sure it's not there.
See if you can twist the flap to the side. Isabel handed the torch back, stuck the nail file in again, and wiggled it.
That's not getting anywhere. I'll try to push it hard enough to bend it.
No, I can't get a good enough grip on the file.
I have a propelling pencil. That might work. Just a mo.
Daisy went down to where she had left her notebook. Alec had given her a leather notebook case with a loop inside to hold a writing implement and a gold propelling pencil to fit in the loop.
Here, use this.
It'd get scratched.
I'd rather have a little bit of fresh air than a pristine pencil. Daisy's suffocating nightmare hovered on the edge of her consciousness. Feeling less casual than she hoped she sounded, she asked, "How long do you think the air in a room this size would last two people?"
"Ages, I'm sure."
Isabel poked the pencil into the keyhole and jabbed. A hammer. I know, my shoe. With the heel of her shoe, she bashed the end of the pencil. The heel hit the keyhole plate with a thump. She lowered the shoe and peered into the hole again. Oh, dear, your pencil went all the way through. The flap is bent right out of the way. Good. Not only can we breathe through the hole if the air in here gets bad, but Vera is bound to see the pencil. I wonder if a rolled-up note could be pushed through. Oh, botheration. Now I haven't got anything to write with. Just several pieces of paper would draw attention, even if it's all blank. True. Inspiration struck. I know. We can write SOS in Morse code by making holes with the nail file. They found by experiment that a half sheet of paper from Daisy's notebook could easily be folded small enough to fit through the keyhole. So they sat on the steps, writing SOS messages. Daisy with the nail file, Isabel with one of Vera's Kirby grips that she found in her pocket, having picked it up off the floor or some piece of furniture. A dozen bits of paper would more than suffice. They decided. Isabel pushed them through. Then she sat back on her heels and contemplated the hair grip. I'm going to have a go at picking the lock with this. Alec made it look so easy. A little hook at the end, I think. Straightening the grip was easy, making a hook at the end not much harder. But the narrow strip of metal was even more difficult to grasp firmly than the nail file. Isabel poked and prodded until it snapped at the point where she had straightened it. It was worth a try, said Daisy. Unless you have any more tricks up your sleeve, we might as well get on with your measuring. Except we can't write down the measurements. What a bore. She sighed, then wondered if sighing used up more oxygen than just breathing. Her chest felt tight. It must be her imagination. They couldn't possibly be running short of air yet. She could smell the carbolic now, and beneath it, a faint, barely perceptible, sickly sweetness. Her throat closed against it. She coughed, gasped, struggled to inhale. Daisy, what's the matter? What's wrong? With an effort, Daisy pulled herself together and forced herself to relax. It's nothing, she wheezed. Sorry, just an after effect of being ill. I breathed some nasty smoke from a rubbish fire on the way here. But now it's all in my imagination. The disinfectant. Isabel sniffed. I can't smell it. I suppose I'm used to it. If Mrs. Hedger ever comes back, I really must persuade her to stop using so much. Are you going to be all right? Yes, quite all right. Let's talk about something else. What do you make of Vaughan's behaviour? Isn't it obvious? He killed Mrs. Gray, and he knows Mr. Underwood and Alec are hot on his trail, so he's making his escape. I've spent too much time with detectives to believe anything is obvious. If he killed her, why persist in trying to find out where she intended to go? Before, it could have been an act to disarm suspicion. But that doesn't explain why he came here just before bolting. He'd have done better simply to leave with all possible haste. I suppose so. And then there's Willie's side of it. Clearly he's been involved in something nefarious at work. Cooking the books, expected to boil over today. I'd guess that's why he's hopping it. Coming here delayed his departure. Unless he believes, or at least hopes, she's still alive, it makes no sense. None of it makes sense, Isabel said crossly. I hope the police have a better idea of what's going on.
I wish they didn't have such a mania for secrecy.
Let's check the shelves for a nail we can extract, and I'll have a go at picking the lock. I really don't want to spend 5 hours in here, plus however long it will take Vera to get help. Daisy glanced around. The room seemed to have shrunk. And even if breathing through the keyhole helps, we can't be sure we won't run out of air. 32.
Half past 12, the inspector fumed. Vaughan's not coming.
He may have been held up, said Alec. Or locked up, though I doubt it. Your county fraud people would have to go over all the figures first. And in my experience, the fraud chappies are not usually so quick off the mark.
I'd better find out. I'll ring my super.
If it were my super, I'd make sure of my ground and talk to the accountants first. None of those concerned has confirmed directly that Vaughan was under suspicion. Even assuming our conjectures are correct, Langridge and Davis may not have even laid a charge yet. You know your own superintendent best, of course.
Underwood grinned.
From what you've said, Mr. Crane is much more ferocious than Perry.
Crane's bark is worse than his bite.
You're right, though. I'll get on to the accountants.
He put through the call.
Not in the office? No, I don't want to talk to Mr. Spencer. Is Miss Chandler available? Thank you. Good morning, Miss Chandler. Yes, D.I. Underwood.
Mindful of the capacity of country operators for listening in, the inspector avoided naming names.
I hope you're now free to confirm that the accounts you were auditing concerned the business and the specific person we were inquiring about.
He listened. Alec could hear Willie's voice, but not what she was saying. She spoke at some length before Underwood asked a couple of clarifying questions, thanked her, and hung up, frowning.
Well, don't tell me we've been barking up the wrong tree.
Not at all. We've been spot on. I didn't quite grasp the details of how Vaughan did it, but he's been helping himself all right. Davis and Langridge went off half an hour ago to present the evidence to the accountant who deals with such matters for the county force. Apparently, Langridge hadn't decided whether to prosecute or to try to recover the monies without undesirable publicity.
Is Vaughan aware that he's in trouble?
She didn't say so. From what she did say, Langridge had no time to go back to his office and confront Vaughan.
He could hardly have expected to get away with it forever. If he's chosen this particular moment to take to his heels, why?
Alec could see more than one answer, but it was officially Underwood's case, and he ought to have a chance to do his share of speculating.
The secretary must have known Langridge was going to see the accountants. Suppose Vaughan went to the office after his appointment this morning, asked to see the boss, and she told him. On top of the pressure we've applied over the murder, it's enough to make anyone take to his heels, let alone a hysteric like Vaughan.
Unless the hysteria is all an act. It's one of the easier emotions to fake. The trouble is, he hasn't been charged on the misappropriation, and we haven't the evidence to charge him with manslaughter, far less murder.
So, at present, we aren't justified in asking other forces to detain him on any grounds other than wanted for questioning. Damnation. He could go to ground before we... No. I bet you a fiver he's heading for France.
No takers. If he killed her, he'll want to keep up the pretense of looking for her for as long as possible, trying to bamboozle us. If he didn't, if he honestly still hopes to find her alive.
Then he'll go on trying,
to the last possible moment to find out where she is? Underwood said grimly, jumping to his feet. And he's been pestering Isabel, Miss Sutcliffe, about it. I'm going to Cherry Trees.
He grabbed his hat from the stand and jammed it onto his head. His overcoat half on, he charged through the door. Alec, amused at his would-be knight errantry, retrieved his hat and coat and followed at a more sedate pace. After all, he had no reason to suppose Daisy was in peril from the abominable Vaughan. He stopped to leave a message for Ernie and Pennycook, who had gone to see the gardener. Then Alec recalled that Daisy had been going to call on Isabel. He speeded his pace. Through the wet streets, they dashed in the Austin 12. Alec pulled up in front of Cherry Trees, Underwood jumping out before the car came to a halt. No sign of Vaughan's black jowet, Alec noted. The front gate hung open. The inspector hurried up the path. When Alec caught up with him, he was banging on the door with one hand and holding down the doorbell button with the other. He stopped. They listened. Not a sound from within.
She's upstairs at the back,
Alec proposed.
Or gone to the shops.
Not in this downpour.
If she set out before... Never mind. Try again, and I'll go round the house, snooping in the windows.
No one in the sitting room. Nothing out of place. Likewise the den and the dining room at the back. With the solidly built house between them, he couldn't hear Underwood's banging. The next window was the half-glazed side door. When he looked through, he blocked much of the grey daylight, so that the passage within was in obscurity. It wasn't so dark he could have failed to see a person, however. He was about to move away when something on the floor a few feet inside the door caught his eye. He stood to one side and craned his neck. The something was a small heap of rubbish. Presumably Mrs. Hedger had left it there when she stormed out on being accosted by Underwood. But Isabel, an orderly person, would never have left it lying. She was the sort who would have cleared it away the moment she noticed it. Alec peered. Paper, splinters of wood. Was that a glint of gold? He tried the door. Locked, but he could break the glass and open it. He hesitated. This was Underwood's case, and Underwood's manner. He should be consulted. Alec went on, glancing in at the kitchen windows as he passed. The small size of the windows obstructed his view, but unless someone was under the table, the room was empty. He caught the inspector trying the front door.
It's not locked. Should we go in?
Yes, but hold your horses a moment.
He told what he'd seen.
It may be just rubbish, but it's right beside the cellar door.
Vaughan pushed Isabel down the stairs,
Underwood gasped, horrified, swinging back to the front door.
Great Scott, no. That wouldn't explain the stuff. I think he does have keys. It would be natural to deny it, with a body found in the locked cellar, whether he killed her or not. My guess is that he somehow managed to lock Isabel in the cellar, and she's pushed everything she could find through the keyhole to attract Miss Layton's attention when she comes home.
Ingenious! She's a resourceful woman. Let's go and release her.
Have you a skeleton key on you?
Alec asked as he followed Underwood into the entrance hall.
No, they're frowned upon. We're supposed to get a warrant and a locksmith. I rather glossed over your lock-picking in my report. Gained access, method unspecified.
You'd better shut your eyes this time. I just hope Isabel hasn't tried to master the trick of it and damaged the wards. Anyone at home?
He called. Turning into the cross passage, they immediately heard a muffled noise ahead, compounded of thumps and whistles, interspersed with yelps that might have been cries of "Help!" Alec recognized the piercing, unladylike whistle that Daisy had been taught by her late brother. She used it, on rare occasions, to summon Nana. He sighed. Of course she was here, had been present at precisely the wrong moment, as usual. He went to the cupboard under the stairs, as Underwood hurried forward to reassure the captives. The contents of the cupboard were neatly arrayed, whether a tribute to Isabel's orderliness, or because the ladies had only resided in the house for a couple of weeks. Alec found the bent clothes hanger at once, hung on a hook. Crouched by the door, the inspector was speaking soothingly into the keyhole.
"We'll have you out in 2 ticks, Miss Sutcliffe. Here's Mr. Fletcher with the wire. You'd better move down the stairs, a bit out of the way of the door."
He switched his ear to the hole, then stood up with a nod to Alec.
"It was Vaughn, all right."
"Is Daisy down there too?" "Oh yes, that's her propelling pencil among the rubbish."
He picked it up and put it in his pocket, then stooped to probe the keyhole with the hook. The inside of the lock felt different. He twisted and turned and jiggled the wire, but nothing clicked.
"Damn! Daisy,"
he called, mouth to hole,
"did you mess about with this lock?"
He turned his head to listen. After a moment, Isabel's voice said,
"We both did. We prized a nail out of the shelves, a nice long one, and tried to open it. Unsuccessfully. Why?"
"Because, between the pair of you, you've mucked it up. Bent the wards, or knocked one crooked or something. We're going to have to get a locksmith."
Much as he'd prefer to, he couldn't stay and deal with Daisy's predicament. The hunt for Vaughn must be set in motion. Alec and Underwood had another interview scheduled with the Cartwrights. Ernie and Pennycook were expected back with whatever they had gleaned from the gardener, White. Depending on their information, Mrs. Hedger might have to be hauled into the police station.
"Are you all right? Over to you."
"Oh, yes. We've only been here."
Faintly.
"Daisy, how long have we been here?"
"No, it hasn't been forever.
About an hour since Vaughn shut the door. Over to you."
"The air is still good for a long time, then. Tell me what Vaughn said to you and what you told him. Over."
He knelt on the floor, the easier to apply his ear to the hole. "I told him about the Hotel Majestic. I'm sorry, but he was looking quite wild-eyed. He locked us in to stop us raising the alarm before he could get away. The rotter had the keys all the time. I expect you and Mr. Underwood are anxious to get on his trail. We'll be all right, but tell the locksmith to hurry. Over."
"We'll send a constable with an axe, in case the locksmith has any difficulty. Tell Daisy I have her gold pencil safe. I'll leave it on the hall table. And give her my love, would you? We're off now. See you later."
"Give my thanks to Mr. Underwood. See you later."
Alec stood up, with a creak in his neck and another in his lower back. Underwood had disappeared at the mention of a locksmith. Now he returned with a bunch of keys dangling from his forefinger.
"I rifled Miss Sutcliffe's handbag,"
he explained in a low voice.
"We oughtn't to leave the house unlocked. I hope she'll forgive me."
"Seeing you rifled the entire house a couple of days ago,"
said Alec,
"I doubt she'll mind. We can put out that alert now. We've got him for false imprisonment, at the least."
"You mean they just went away and left us here?"
Daisy asked indignantly.
"They have to chase after Vaughn.
I suppose I could have asked them to fetch my hatchet and chop down the door, but I didn't think of it in time. Besides, I'd really rather not have to replace the whole door.
No, sorry, of course not. I just hope they can find a locksmith who'll come right away.
You're not getting the wind up again, are you, Daisy?
Certainly not. Don't harp on that.
My turn to apologize. I didn't mean to. I know it was just because you were ill.
Being locked in a cellar doesn't improve one's disposition. Alec wouldn't have left if there were any danger. He may even think we're safer locked up. At worst, his axe-bearer will come along and let us out for a late lunch. Isabel grinned.
Hungry again?
I went for a long walk this morning. Nana would have loved it. You really must get a dog. Vaughan wouldn't have taken us by surprise if you had a nice mastiff sleeping in the front hall.
I was thinking of a bulldog. I've always liked the look of them, and someone told me they're not half as fierce as they look.
More likely to slobber a burglar to death than to bite him.
What's your Nana?
Hines 57. She's a farm dog, part sheepdog, probably part terrier. My stepdaughter fell for her when she was a puppy. They talked about different breeds, Daisy having known a good many dogs while growing up in the country, at Fairacres. Then they talked about gardens, flowers, fruit and vegetables, and raising chickens. Isabel hoped for better harvests here, in the temperate south, than she had achieved in the suburbs of Huddersfield. The natural sequel was food. Daisy was ravenous, as well as dying of thirst, by the time a knocking on the cellar door announced the arrival of a bobby, axe in hand. The constable was perfectly willing to chop down the door, if that was what Miss Sutcliffe required.
Howsomdever?
A locksmith was on the way from High Wycombe. If the ladies would bide just a wee bit longer, they would be released with no damage done. Daisy would have opted for immediate release, but it was for Isabel to decide. They bided a wee bit longer. An hour later, they were sitting in the kitchen, finishing the last bites of a lunch of toasted cheese and apples, when the doorbell rang. Isabel got up and peeked out of the window.
A black umbrella. I think it's Mrs. Barnes. I don't feel like entertaining, but it's the first time she's called, and I want to see if she has any suggestions about someone to take Mrs. Hedges' place.
Offer a cup of coffee. I could do with one. I'll put it on while you answer the door. An explanation of why they were having after-lunch coffee so late inevitably turned into an account of the morning's excitements. The doctor's wife was properly sympathetic, as well as much entertained.
I won't breathe a word to a soul, she promised. Goodness, I never dreamt the life of a policeman's wife was so exciting.
It's not supposed to be, Daisy assured her.
When Mrs. Barnes left, Daisy helped Isabel wash the few dishes, then went back to the hotel. She had intended to take a nap, but she wasn't really sleepy, and her typewriter sat in silent reproach on the table in the window. Once she started transforming her notes on the Inns of Court into an article, she became absorbed in manipulating words. Time passed without her noticing, until a knock on the door made her surface.
Mrs. Fletcher, it's Sally. You didn't come down to tea, so I brought you some.
You spoil me, Sally. Put it here, will you? I've fallen behind in my work, so I'll just keep at it while it's going smoothly.
I don't want to interrupt.
Sally hesitated.
But do you mind if I ask you a question?
Daisy tore her thoughts away from the Inns of Court, which the arrival of tea had scarcely disrupted. Yes?
It's Auntie May. Someone told me she was at home, not out at work, so I went round this afternoon.
She's upset. Angry, for sure. And maybe afraid. But she won't tell me what the trouble is. She just sits there in her rocking chair, rocking and rocking. Do you know what's wrong, Mrs. Fletcher? What happened to upset her so?
The police went round to Cherry Trees this morning to ask her a few questions. That's all. You know my husband and D.I. Underwood. You know they wouldn't bully her. She wouldn't talk to them, just stormed out of the house, I was told. Older people without much education tend to be afraid of the police, I'm afraid. Daisy added tactfully.
Auntie left school at 12 to go into service.
There you are, then. I wouldn't worry about it. She's just being awkward.
I know she can be difficult. She likes to keep herself to herself, you see, and questions always upset her. Oh, dear. I suppose she'll get over it.
I'm sure she will. Daisy didn't mention that Mrs. Hedger might have lost her job at Cherry Trees in the meantime. Try not to worry, Sally.
Thanks, Mrs. Fletcher. I'll pop round after supper and make sure she's all right. It's just that she's the only relative I've got left in these parts.
Daisy went on with her work. It was going well. She let her tea grow cold and got crumbs in her typewriter. But by the time she went down to dinner, she had finished the draft. The dining room was busy and buzzing with chatter. Sally had saved Daisy a small table in a comparatively quiet corner.
Sorry, Mrs. Fletcher. We're out of everything, excepting the ham.
Then ham let it be. What's brought the crowd out?
Hasn't Mr. Fletcher told you yet? They've arrested Mr. Vaughan. I've got to run. I'll bring your soup in just a minute.
Sally had no time to stop and chat. Eavesdropping on nearby diners supplied arrested for murder, but offered no further credible details. Daisy went back up to the bedroom without much food for speculation. She sat on the bed with her typescript, trying to concentrate on editing. Alec came in before she had finished, resting off his tie as he closed the door.
Darling, you look exhausted. Sally says you've arrested Vaughan.
I suppose Sergeant Harris has been talking again. I'm going to write a strongly worded suggestion that he be sacked, or at least demoted. Yes, Vaughan was easy to catch, driving his wife's car. She's furious. She wanted it for some errand this afternoon. Once we were fairly sure he was heading for Paris, and had good reason for stopping him, it didn't take long to pull him in.
Alec grinned.
We're grateful to you and Isabel for the information, and for being stuck in the cellar.
What do you mean? You arrested him for kidnapping us, not for murder?
False imprisonment, as he didn't run off with you. We'll need your statements tomorrow. Still, no grounds for homicide. We can hope for a confession.
Wearily, he sat down on the edge of the bed.
But I'm not inclined to believe he killed her. We found Judith Gray's maid and housekeeper, one in London, one in Bath. So tomorrow we'll have local lads ask them a few questions. Between them, they should be able to confirm the quarrel Mrs. Tom heard about, and identify the second woman for certain.
Mrs. Tom? You didn't tell me. I'm glad she had some success for her trouble.
Yes. It may reconcile her to Tom's notion of a nice outing to the countryside. The maid used to go up to town with Mrs. Gray, so we're hoping for the names of London friends.
What about the one in Saint-Tropez? Elizabeth Knox?
She wired. She and her husband, and Gigi, who turns out to be Sir George Gantry, are devastated. A flick is going round to talk to them.
The inquest is tomorrow afternoon?
Yes. I doubt you and your friends will be called upon. Underwood's going to request an adjournment as early as possible in the proceedings, and he says the coroner's a reasonable man. Enough, Daisy. I didn't get much sleep last night, and I'll be up early again in the morning.
33. Once again, Daisy awoke to the arrival of Sally with early morning tea, to find Alec already gone. She snatched at the fading wisps of a dream and missed. A glance at the clock showed that she had missed breakfast too. However, as well as a little pot of not very early tea, Sally set a plate of bread and butter and a hard-boiled egg on the bedside table. Thank you so much, Sally. The sight of her set questions buzzing in Daisy's brain. Are you in a hurry?
No, Mrs. Fletcher. I'm finished serving breakfasts for this morning. Mr. Fletcher and Mr. Piper had theirs ages ago and went out.
Pull up a chair. I'd like to ask a couple of questions, if you don't mind.
Course not. Anything I can do to help.
I was just wondering if your aunt was very upset that she wasn't paid for the time she worked while no one was living at Cherry Trees.
She wasn't happy about it. Well, who would be? But she didn't really expect to be. I don't blame Miss Sutcliffe, mind. She didn't ask Auntie to do it, and there can't have been much needed doing with the house empty.
Why do you think she bothered then, if she didn't expect to be paid? Sally considered, her head tilted.
Partly habit. She's ever so set in her ways, Auntie May. And she could always hope, couldn't she? When you make just enough to scrape by, sometimes you've just got to hope.
Remembering her own less than affluent days, Daisy could only agree. She persevered. Yet yesterday she went off in a huff in the middle of her work. That was more of an interruption than spending a few minutes answering a few questions would have been, even for someone as crotchety as Mrs. Hedger. It seems a bit silly. Against her own interests.
She's always been contrary. It is odd, though. She's not been properly herself recently.
In what way?
Sort of like as if...
Sally frowned.
As if she's got a secret. Something she won't tell even me. And I'm the only person she ever talks to.
A pleasant secret, would you guess? Or unpleasant?
I'm not sure. Sometimes she seemed pleased. Not happy pleased, more sort of smug. But sometimes it seemed as if she was almost afraid, like I told you yesterday. Do you think she knew who killed Mrs. Gray?
It's possible. Do you think she'd be likely to withhold that information from the police?
I don't know, Mrs. Fletcher, and that's the truth. She'll be in awful trouble if she did, won't she?
Tears sprang up in Sally's eyes. Luckily, the hanky under Daisy's pillow was unused. She handed it over. Afraid that Mrs. Hedger might be in much more serious trouble than withholding information, she had no words of comfort to offer. Mopping her eyes, Sally cheered up.
But maybe now Mr. Vaughan's been arrested, it won't matter much. She really cheered up when I told her they caught the murderer.
So Sally believed Vaughan had been charged with murder, as, no doubt, did most, or all of those who heard of the arrest. It was not for Daisy to enlighten them. She moved on to the last question that must have revolved and evolved in her dreams. Did your aunt ever mention getting a letter of recommendation, a character, from Mrs. Gray?
Not that I remember. Oh, wait, She did say, ages ago, that Mrs. Grey didn't like her and would likely give her a reference that wasn't fit to show. But Mrs. Clark...